1320 AM and W248 DE, broadcasting at 97.5 FM.
You're tuned into your home for the Wisconsin Badgers on 97.5 FM and 1320 AM WFHR, locally grown radio.
This is CBS News on the Hour, presented by Indeed.com.
I'm Stacey Lynn in Washington. The NATO summit is about to begin in Lithuania. CBS's Nancy Cordes is there with the president.
President Biden landed here in Lithuania to some welcome news on the eve of this NATO summit. Turkey's president had agreed to let Sweden become the 32nd member of the NATO alliance, dropping his year-long opposition. Sweden and Finland, famously neutral for decades, applied to join NATO after Putin's unprovoked attacks on Ukraine began last year.
Severe weather and flooding impacting parts of the Northeast in the U.S. and also overseas. In Japan, at least six are dead after record rains triggered flooding and landslides in the southwest region of the country.
Japanese TV showed scenes of utter devastation in the southwestern prefectures of Fukuoka and Oita, with homes torn apart and engulfed in mud. Over 1 million residents were ordered to evacuate, with rainfall in one city reaching nearly 16 inches. That's almost a month's worth of precipitation in just 24 hours. Lucy Kraft, CBS News, Tokyo.
Former Dr. Larry Nassar was found stabbed in a federal prison in Florida, where he's serving a 60-year sentence for sexually abusing hundreds of female gymnasts. He was stabbed by another inmate 10 times in the back, neck, and chest. Correspondent Jim Crisula on a delicate dig in the nation's heartland.
Archaeologists are digging in a central Nebraska field to locate the bodies of more than 80 children who were buried at a Native American boarding school. They attended the Genoa Indian Industrial School west of Omaha. It opened in 1884 and closed in 1931. Peak enrollment hit 600 students.
Madonna speaking out after her recent health scare.
Her North American tour was set to begin next week. Now the songstress says it'll be rescheduled, with the European leg now beginning in October. On her social media platforms, the 64-year-old says her first thought when she woke up in the hospital was her children. The words come about 2 weeks after she was in intensive care at a New York City hospital after developing a serious bacterial infection. She had reportedly been found unresponsive. Matt Piper, CBS News, New York.
And Novak Djokovic's white tennis shoes with the green 23 on the heel might have to be replaced soon. The seven-time Wimbledon champ has won 23 Grand Slam singles titles. He could add to that total on Sunday if he wins three more matches at the All England Club. So that means he would need new 24 shoes. This is CBS News.
Need to hire quality candidates fast? You need Indeed, the end-to-end hiring solution. Attract, interview, and hire candidates all in one place. Visit Indeed.com/credit.
Freshness made easy with Febreze Small Spaces.
One continuous freshness that fights odors with no batteries and no outlets? Try Febreze Small Spaces. Ah, but what's a small space? To answer that, we brought in our lawyer.
Small spaces include, but are not limited to, bathrooms, closets, laundry room, kid room, pet corners, man cave, she sheds, most nooks, and all crannies.
There you go. Febreze Small Spaces is the world's most convenient. Febreze Small Spaces is super convenient and never stops freshening for 45 days.
Mm-hmm.
Free happy Febreze, la 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 la.
This radio commercial was made to convince you to stop speeding. We can't use siren sound effects on the radio, so we'll use other equally jarring sound effects to get your attention. Like telling you that whether you drive a little over the speed limit or a lot, you can crash just the same. You could hurt yourself or worse, others.
I'm at the scene of the collision.
And the damage you cause will be beyond repair. See? We didn't have to use crash or siren sounds after all. Speeding catches up with you. Brought to you by NHTSA.
What's your favorite thing about a good movie? What makes the perfect song? And what's it about the first lines of a book that will snatch our attention? If these questions intrigued your artsy interest, you don't want to miss Director's Cut on WFHR every Sunday night from 8 to 9. Your WFHR program director, James, and head of production, Seth, will be diving into the local arts and entertainment, hot topic movies, hidden gems, and more. Audience feedback and requests are encouraged for this fun and open conversation about art in all its forms. It's art artists supporting artists, in their own words.
Bug Tussle, providing high-speed internet to rural Wisconsin. No data caps, no contracts. 877-227-0924. Call today to learn how you can get 3 months free. 877-227-0924.
Here's your forecast from locally grown radio WFHR. Mainly cloudy skies expected overnight with lows around 58. Winds out of the north, 5 to 10 miles per hour. Highs around 79. Tomorrow, mainly clear skies. Chance for scattered rain showers. Tomorrow night, lows around 57. 74 Wednesday with a chance for scattered storms. 81 Thursday, storms continue. For Civic Media, I'm meteorologist Jennifer Wojcicki. Currently, it's 65.
From Wisconsin Rapids to Stevens Point, your news talk and sports is on 97.5 FM, locally grown radio.
Buddy, how we doing? I'm Charlie Behrens, inviting you to join me Saturdays and or Sundays at noon. It's a horse apiece, whatever you decide. We're doing the Cripes Cast, where we talk to people for and or from the Midwest, and it's more fun than a six-pack of Jolly Good. Okay, the pride of Random Lake, that Jolly Good is. Anyway, it's on your Civic Media station and the Civic Media app. And do me a favor, yeah, tell your folks I says hi. Okay, real good.
What if I just, instead of giving out the talk of text line, just started giving up Robin Voss's number all the time? I saw it go. 844-96-PARTY. What is it?
I saw it go. Write it down. 608-237-9163. Call now.
Moving Wisconsin forward, one joke at a time, this is Kristen Bry with As Goes Wisconsin.
Yada, yada, yada.
Hello, Wisconsin!
Is alimony fair? 844-967-2789. Pretty straightforward question. Probably going to get a lot of different answers. I think it's, like most things, very gray. But in your opinion, is having to pay alimony after you get divorced fair, and for how long? Like, what is the adequate amount of time? And this is, you know, at this day and age, now there are women who are the breadwinners, and so there are now women who are paying alimony. Obviously, historically, this has been men paying their ex-wives. But I would love to hear from you. Is alimony fair? Or have we moved beyond that now that women can work and or both spouses are free to work? 844-967-2789. That's 844-96-PARTY. Jane Madner, is alimony fair?
I think I agree with you in that there's a lot of gray there. You know, should you get, if you're only married for 2 years, should you get alimony for the rest of your life? I don't know that that's fair.
I would say no.
Right? I mean, that just seems, yeah. And I think most people go into marriage assuming this is going to last forever.
Yeah.
And so I don't think a lot of people do I know some people do prenups, but I think the average person probably doesn't.
That's a whole other topic.
Yeah.
Because like Mike and I did a post-nup, and it's not even like we have that much money to protect, but just in, you know, this was coming into the marriage. This was mine. This was yours. These were our businesses. But it was interesting because that in Wisconsin, it's called spousal maintenance. And that came up during when I met with my lawyer as her trying to explain it to me. And so I think we ended up putting like a sunset provision. Because, you know, for me, it's like it's as much you expect. One, you expect the marriage to last forever. But also, like, I have every expectation that, like, I'm going to continue working, right? Like,
sure.
That's because that's who I am and stuff. And so, but you just can't predict what's going to happen. And so that's been my only experience thus far with, like, having to make a decision for our post-nup. Because you've been married prior to Paul, did that come up at all for you?
It's something we discussed and then ultimately did not do a prenup.
Did alimony come up at all? Because you were working. You were always working too, right?
Oh, yeah. I've always worked. I've always been working. No, alimony has never come up. Nothing like that. But I get too, Wisconsin's a 50-50 state, right? So
yeah,
you split assets pretty much down the middle.
Yeah. Well, and also there is, I was reading this morning, because I'll talk about why I brought this up in just a second, but Wisconsin does have different laws than Florida, but this basically what happened in Florida, why I'm bringing all this up, is Ron DeSantis has signed a bill into law that ends like permanent alimony. And there are a lot of women who are not very happy about it. And so I was like, there's a lot of different ways to go with this, but I just thought the simple question of is alimony fair is a good place to start. So would love to hear from you, 844-967-2789.
Anne is on the phone from Eau Claire. Good morning, Anne. What do you think?
Good morning. So my experience is myself and my husband, current husband, are both retired U.S. Air Force, and we both have ex-spouses. When we divorce, there is an archaic federal law that says that our spouse garners part of our pension. I was married for my entire career, 23 years. He was married for 17 years, 14 years, 14 years of his career. My thoughts are that, A, we don't get any of our pension back for the entire duration of our spouses, ex-spouses' lives until they die. I wish that there was a sliding scale. Yeah, it would be fair. Like, he's the man. I gave my GI Bill to him to get his master's degree and all this stuff. So he's making $80,000 a year now, whereas I was living on like $24,000 just on my pension and my disability. It is what it is. There's no point in losing sleep over it. But if for the duration of their raising children, or even the duration of how long we were married, they got a sliding scale of pension, I would be very happy with that. That would be, you know, fair, because mm-hmm. if I was in his shoes, I would appreciate a little bit of pension, a little bit of help getting a leg up. But for life, no. And the same with my ex. He's a Texas resident, and that's their law. I was in Arizona when that happened, but it's still a federal mandate that for military anyways, veterans, and I'm sure there's a lot of people out there that can relate, we lose part of our pension if we've been married for any part of, you know, our military career, and then we divorce.
And that there's no stipulation as far as how long you have to be married. So even if you were only married a year, that's the case?
I'm not sure about that, honestly. I do know that, you know, a lot of spouses get married mill to mill because there's convenience factors. They get their housing allowance and whatnot. But if you're married long enough to have children and then you get divorced and then you retire, then that pension goes to your ex. Now, if you're not in long enough to retire, you don't get a pension, then of course it's moot, but still.
Still. That's really interesting, because this sounds like it's a federal bill for military, but this is the permanent alimony is what just ended in Florida, which I don't think we have in Wisconsin.
Except for Florida.
But, yeah, but I think you're right. Like, I think there is
Florida.
That's really interesting that you say that. Thanks so much for the call, Anne.
Thanks, Anne.
There's a lot of, like I said, there's a lot of women who are not happy about this, but I also think, is this ever something that should be permanent? Because I totally understand especially when there's kids involved, but this is separate from child support. The idea that I gave up especially if you give up your career to focus on the house and split like responsibilities and everything. And then like you take that time off from your career, you have to try to get like work again. You've lost your purchasing, not your purchasing power, but like where you maybe would have been. But you know, if you get divorced at 40, should you still be getting alimony at 65 when your ex wants to retire? I say no.
Yeah, it's and I'd love to hear from some men, because I think as you pointed out, at least initially the main burden of paying alimony was on men.
Yeah.
And so I can't imagine that any of them want to be paying alimony for the rest of their ex's life.
No, I mean, I'm sure most of them don't want to be paying alimony immediately. I mean, I have never been divorced, but I think for some people, you don't really like the person when you're first getting divorced. You don't really like that person. And so your desire to pay them anything is not very high.
844-967-2789. 844-96-PARTY is alimony fair.
So I'll give you a little more detail on what just happened in Florida. So on Friday, this came across my, this was the headline. And of course, it kind of grabbed me. This is a death sentence for me. Florida Republican women say they will switch parties after DeSantis approves alimony law.
Wow.
Yeah. So Governor Ron DeSantis on Friday signed a measure that will overhaul the state's alimony laws. And this has been an ongoing thing. Rick Scott, this was already happening when Rick Scott was still governor as far as bills getting proposed. Rick Scott vetoed it twice and DeSantis vetoed it once. And it's been like a decade of clashing over this issue. And so it includes doing away with what's known as permanent alimony. And so along with that, the measure will set up a process for ex-spouses who make alimony payments to seek modifications to alimony agreements when they want to retire. It allows judges to reduce or terminate alimony, support, or maintenance payments after considering a number of factors, such as the age and health of the person who makes the payments, and the customary retirement age of that person's occupation, the economic impact of reduction in alimony. So there's like all of these things that I would actually consider, which I think is probably a good thing. But the political side of this is that there's this group called, where did I see it? I don't know if it's
Women for Alimony.
I think it's like First Wives Club or something like
oh,
that.
Oh yeah, you're right. Yes.
Is it called First Wives Club?
Yes, I believe so. Something very similar.
Oh, God. I thought I grabbed it, and I'll have to go look at the article again. But this was the quote coming from that organization. On behalf of the thousands of women who our group represents, we are very disappointed in the governor's decision to sign the alimony reform bill. We believe by signing it, he has put older women in a situation which will cause financial devastation. The so-called party of family values has just contributed to erosion of the institution of marriage in Florida. This is a 63-year-old woman who founded the group that we'll find the name
First Wives Advocacy Group.
I was close. Yeah. First Wives Advocacy Group. And from their point, the quote goes further, saying DeSantis has just impoverished all the older women in Florida. And I know at least 3,000 women across the state of Florida are switching to Democrat, and we will campaign against him all the way forever. So there's political ramifications to this. And I guess comes back to when we talk about like Social Security and Medicare, are these things that you have planned on and then they go away? Because if you are in your 60s and you had thought you were going to get alimony, it's not super easy, I'm sure, to just turn around and go get a job now either.
Not when you're an older woman, trust me. It's not that easy.
So it goes back to my original question, what's fair? And I also have a follow-up question we can get into the next segment a little bit of like, oh, this is what it took for you to realize you don't like Ron DeSantis, but that's
like another one.
Like now that it affects you, now you're like, oh, now I'll rally against him. But is alimony fair considering all of the nuance and gray area of this? Where do you fall on the idea of alimony? Separate from child support, but actually spousal support after you get divorced. 844-967-2789. That's 844-96-PARTY. We will take your texts. We will take your calls. If you're watching the live stream right now, you can leave a comment, and we will get to those after the break. This is As Goes Wisconsin.
R-D-I-B-O-R-C-E becomes final today.
Keep up on the day's news, talk, and sports on Wisconsin's home for locally grown radio, 97.5 FM and WFHR 1320 AM.
Starting at 6 a.m. Up North News, 8 to 10, The Earl Ingram Show. Mondays, 8 to 9, Under the Helmet with the Gravedigger, Gilbert Brown and Earl Ingram. 10 to 12, As Goes Wisconsin. At noon, Civic Media Network News. At 12:15, Town Call. 1 to 3, The Todd Alba Show. 3 to 4, Matt Flynn Direct. 4 to 6, The Devil's Advocates with Dom and Crute. And 6 to 7, The Maggie Dawn Show. On 5:40 a.m., WAUK.
A no-holds-barred political conversation. That's Matt Flynn Direct.
This is a scam, and Tucker Carlson is one of the guys. He's one of the guys who said the election was stolen, Dominion voting machines are no good, on the air, but in the background, he's going, this is insane. This is a load of bull. The guy lies for a living. He lies with a straight face.
Matt Flynn Direct, weekday afternoons from 3 until 4 on the Civic Media Network and on the Civic Media app. Direct from the Dairy State, it's Sharp Cheddar Weekends, a three-hour block of Wisconsin-produced radio, Saturdays and Sundays from 11 a.m. till 2 p.m., featuring Raised in Wisco with Joe Clayfish and Danielle Fairman, The Cripes Cast with Charlie Behrens, and Under the Helmet with the Gravedigger, Gilbert Brown. You can enjoy it by the slice or enjoy the whole darn thing. Sharp Cheddar Weekends is radio so fresh, it squeaks. Listen in on the Civic Media station or on the app.
Here's your updated forecast on the Shaw.
Chance for scattered thunderstorms overnight, otherwise overcast. Lows level off around 65, southwesterly winds 5 to 10 miles an hour. Chance for scattered thunderstorms again tomorrow. Daytime highs approaching 80, sunshine mixed with clouds at times. Cloudy skies expected tomorrow night. Chance for scattered thunderstorms, lows level off around 60. For Civic Media, I'm meteorologist Derek Height. Currently, it's 70 degrees.
This summer, 5:40 a.m. WAUK has a new lineup. At 12:15, Wisconsin Roundtable. 1 to 3, The Todd Alba Show. On 5:40 a.m. WAUK.
He's a visionary future man. He's not an evil alien from outer space. He's an Earth man. Mark Zuckerberg speaks the words. He doth instruct and we doth learn. He will annihilate the past and usher us into the metaverse. The metaverse. The metaverse. Rejoice, rejoice, cause we're going into the metaverse.
Wisconsin. I am Kristen Bry, and we once again are joined by Greg Bach, filling in for Jane That Nair today.
Hello.
What song were we just listening to?
That was a song called The Metaverse.
What? Who made by?
Some guy on the internet.
Oh my gosh.
His name is Andre something or other, but I when I found it immediately, I'm like, it's like 2.5 minutes long, and you need to watch the video because it's art.
Is it?
Oh, it is.
It's not satire. It's art.
Oh, it's, can it be both?
I guess it can be both.
Isn't all art satire and all satire art?
I guess, but I'm saying, like, is it visually,
it's hilarious,
aesthetic? Or yeah, so it's fun. It's meant to be funny.
Yes, absolutely. Yep.
Have we had an update on if and when Elon and Zuck are going to fight?
Oh, God.
It was like all the rage last week, but I haven't heard if there's actually any movement happening with that.
Probably not. Wasn't it Elon who challenged Zuck? Because Zuck doesn't sound like the kind of guy who's going to say that out loud.
Yes. And Elon challenged Zuck, and Zuck's response was, send me location, brah. I think I added the brah.
I mean, the thing is, he's trying so hard to get out of his shell as a quiet boy, but I'm afraid that Zuck would murder him. I've seen Zuck train.
Yes. But I also feel like Elon's got that dad strength. The dad strength of having 11 children.
Do you think you'd call Elon Musk and be like, name all 11 of your children's name? No, not even close.
But anyways, so we've been talking. I would still love to hear from you as far as if you've thought about this. How you're going to deal with AI in the 2024 election, because it's coming. There is no sign that there is going to be any kind of regulation or self-monitoring of it. Anyone who can, any of the grassroots groups, the PACs, the campaigns that can use it, likely will use it. And so what's left is like personal responsibility to not find yourself totally susceptible to everything you see and read and hear, but like some stuff has to be true. So how are we going to navigate this as a society? And what have you thought about this? Or is this the first time anyone has brought it up to you? 844-967-2789. Tony Zimmerman on the Facebook live stream says, I need to see something reported from multiple places rather than a single source, which could be faked or duped by AI. And I think that's smart. I think that's sometimes when I see something that everyone's talking about and multiple sources are talking about as a big story versus like a one-off thing that gets sent to me, it's always, that's where more like media literacy comes into play, where it's like, is there a reason that the bigger guys are not covering this? That is, they just don't think it's a big enough story. They couldn't verify it. Or why is only this one niche outlet talking about this in this way and like trying to be, use some critical thinking when you don't see it more often. All right. We got someone on the phone, Greg. We got Eric from Tosa. What do you think?
Yeah, hi. I just wanted to say I really picked up the phone real quick to call and announce that allegedly Elon Musk's mother has called off the fight.
Really? How does that work? So Elon still takes directions from his mom.
And that was why there was a mocking post of some kind saying something about he took directions from his mom and there will be no fight.
Wow. That's a win for moms everywhere, I think. If the richest man in the world and arguably one of the biggest trolls in the world still listens to his mom, that I think bodes well for mothers everywhere. Right?
Thank you for the call, Eric.
Oh, really quickly though, I'd like to say on the AI.
Yeah.
Oh, sorry about that.
Oh, I'm sorry. Yeah. Yeah. I personally believe the key to surviving these elections, I guess, until we have some sort of regulation, which the cat's out of the bag, so it'll probably never occur, the key phrase for me is due diligence. When you see something, don't believe it off firsthand, don't go with it, go back and look for a second, third, fourth source, whatever it may be, because what they do, they know that all they're doing with AI is they're feeding into biases. And so people mm-hmm. that are completely biased and roll with it are just going to jump to it and jump on it. They put a kernel of truth in there and then spin it out of control. And if it fits your narrative, they know that a certain number of people are going to do no due diligence and just run with it. And that's how it works. But due diligence destroys disinformation, I'll say.
Absolutely.
Absolutely, yeah.
Thanks for the call, Eric.
Thanks, Garrick.
And it's, you know, again, that's why some of this is personal responsibility of your and your own media literacy, because we love to find nuggets and news articles that agree with our predisposition.
Mm-hmm.
Like,
I'm guilty of that.
And, you know, the things like the thing, what when you like instinctively want to share something, like think about the things that you're like, because it makes you laugh, it makes you feel something, it agrees with your vision of the world versus, you know, I know because I say it all the time. And I think it's a really good thing to follow whatever social media platform you find yourself on the most, especially if you use them to take in information. So it's Instagram, it's Twitter, Facebook, TikTok. Follow accounts that specifically you don't agree with. So, like, I follow Breitbart, I follow Daily Wire, I follow a lot of accounts that I don't like what they put out into the world, and I have, like, a knee-jerk reaction when I see it, but it's still good to see what they're feeding people, and, like, the same impulse of the things that I do follow, that I do find interesting, that do agree with my worldview, like, they do that for other people. And so, just notice the things that you want to share versus the things you immediately reject. And maybe that can be part of that due diligence.
Yeah.
All right. Well, we got to take a break. When we come back, we're going to recombobulate with the one and only Dan Schaefer on childcare, budget, and maybe a little where we are in Milwaukee with the vote for the sales tax. So stick around. This is As Goes Wisconsin.
This summer, 540 AM W. From the home of NASCAR's Dick Trickle, locally grown radio, 97.5 FM and WFHR 1320 AM, your news, talk, and sports station.
Locally grown 1320 AM and 97.5 FM WFHR programming is broadcast from the Bug Tussle Studios.
Bug Tussle, keeping you connected to the world around you.
Saddle up, buckaroos. It's time to start the cattle drive with Trail Tunes, the new cowboy, western, and south of the border show on Wiscountry 105.5 WIRI. Every Thursday from 7 to 8 p.m., join me, Gene, Roy, Tex, and Rex with songs of lonesome cowboys, wicked rustlers, and sighing senoritas. From the sons of the pioneers to riders in the sky, Trail Tunes will have you wishing for those wide open spaces. Every Thursday from 7 to 8, only on Wiscountry 105.5.
And we're live here outside the Perez family home, just waiting for the... And there they go! Almost on time this morning. Mom is coming out the front door strong with a double-arm kid carry. Looks like Dad has the bags. Daughter is bringing up the rear. Oh, but the diaper bag wasn't closed. Diapers and toys are everywhere. Ooh, but Mom has just nailed the perfect car seat buckle for the toddler. And now the eldest daughter, who looks to be about 9 or 10, has secured herself in the booster seat. Dad zips the bag closed, and they're off. Ah, but looks like Mom doesn't realize her coffee cup is still on the roof of the car. And there it goes. Oh, that's a shame. That mug was a fam favorite.
Don't sweat the small stuff. Just nail the big stuff. Like making sure your kids are buckled correctly in the right seat for their age and size. Learn more at nhtsa.gov/the right seat.
Visit nhtsa.gov/the right seat.
Brought to you by NHTSA and the Ad Council.
If you came across someone struggling with hunger, how would you recognize them? By their clothes? Their age? The way they speak? Would you notice an 8-year-old girl who's not excited for summer break
because she may not be having lunch again until September?
Or a single father of two who works three part-time jobs and still can't put enough food on the table? Or maybe a mother who cleans offices at night,
hoping to find meeting leftovers to take home to her hungry family?
Or a war veteran who's having a hard time
landing a job and getting back on his feet?
I am the one in eight Americans who struggle with hunger. People you pass by every day but never knew were hungry. I am hunger in America.
Hunger can be hard to recognize. Learn why at IamHungerInAmerica.org. Brought to you by Feeding America, 200 Food Banks Strong, and the Ad Council.
Let it slip, it cough, it check. Talk to the doctor now and share.
Nearly 1 in 2 U.S. adults have high blood pressure. That's why it's important to self-monitor your blood pressure in 4 easy-to-remember steps. It starts with a monitor. Be next to talk to your doctor about your blood pressure numbers. Get down with your blood pressure. Self-monitoring is power. Visit ManagerBP.org. Brought to you by the Ad Council, the American Heart Association, and the American Medical Association, in partnership with the Office of Minority Health and Health Resources and Services Administration.
Bug Tussle, providing high-speed internet to rural Wisconsin. No data caps, no contracts. 877-227-0924. Call today to learn how you can get 3 months free. 877-227-0924.
Here's your forecast from locally grown radio WFHR. Mainly cloudy skies expected overnight with lows around 58. Winds out of the north, 5 to 10 miles per hour. Highs around 79. Tomorrow, mainly clear skies. Chance for scattered rain showers. Tomorrow night, lows around 57. 74 Wednesday with a chance for scattered storms. 81 Thursday, storms continue. For Civic Media, I'm meteorologist Jennifer Wojcicki. Currently, it's 65.
People, come to talk.
I'm on my way, I'm making it. I've got to make it show, yeah. So much larger than life. I'm gonna watch it grow.
Greg Bach back on the board today, and we are kicking off Our new weekly segment, it's official instead of sporadic. Dan Schaefer is going to recombobulate with us on Tuesdays at 10:30 starting today. How you doing, Dan?
Nope.
Oh, you are muted, friend. There you go.
Sorry about that. It's been a little while. I was a little discombobulated, but you helped me out there. We're here for our weekly recombobulation segment. I'm very excited we got this figured out. I'm going to be joining you every Tuesday. I'm very excited.
Yeah, no, it'll be a fun way to start the week as far as talking what's been going on in Milwaukee, what's been going on in the state. Probably could have been used this a little earlier considering how much has been happening in Milwaukee and the state and trying to break down the budget cycle and the negotiations. But we're in the final stretch of that. And so I know let's start with something I think you and I were equally angry about, although we can't really measure it, but and may not be totally dead or over yet, but a week and a half ago, so Thursday before last, in the middle of the night, the Republicans on the Joint Finance Committee decided to totally discontinue, gut, whatever adjective or verb you want to use, the Child Care Accounts program, and instead put a rotating or revolving $15 million loan instead of actually continuing with the subsidies that would and have been keeping child care centers afloat during this crisis of child care. Now, you've written some follow-up pieces of and have talked more with some of the biggest, like the larger organizers, trying to make sure that this doesn't just die in the middle of the night. What have you heard and what is the most up to date as far as like, could there even be a strike?
Yeah, so I went to the rally a week ago that child care providers and advocates and parents, it was actually mostly parents who were at that rally at the Capitol in Madison last Tuesday morning. Talked to a bunch of people just really to, you know, figure out what the response was going to be after Republicans voted to gut this funding that had really been successful. It had stabilized a system that has been in decline for a long time. Obviously, child care providers didn't have a great time during the pandemic.
Yeah.
But this is a problem that dates back a long time. You know, one of the providers I was talking to was saying that, you know, we've lost 5,000 family care providers since 2007. And for the first time since then, you know, this funding from the federal government through the pandemic relief really stabilized this program, allowed people to raise wages, keep rates low, keep a lot of these child care facilities open. And now, the Republicans voted to gut all of the $340 million that the governor had proposed for this program. So now we're looking at a difficult situation where, you know, some studies have said 25% of all childcare facilities will close as a result of this action. A new study last week said it would be about 2,000 childcare centers that would close as a reaction to this. One of the top organizers I talked to said within the next 6 to 9 months that she expects 1,000 childcare providers to close. You know, the study said this would directly impact 87,000 children.
Wow.
And so I really think, you know, this is such a big deal. The system as it is barely hanging on. And without this funding, you know, anything that has stabilized over the last couple of years with this funding is going to be lost. So, you know, I think you look at these pandemic era programs that popped up to provide relief to people. Most of them are winding down right now, but we have a program here that worked. It was successful. Mm-hmm. It did stabilize the system. It kept these places open. And now without it, you know, we have the budget surplus. We can fund this program without raising anyone's taxes or doing anything like that. And now the Republicans of the state are creating a child care crisis by denying the extension of this funding.
And it's so frustrating. But there is still a chance that this week Democrats are going to introduce an amendment.
Right.
And I think there's even more action happening today. Or was I reading that wrong?
Yeah, so child care providers have been, you've been reaching out to their network, a lot of these organizers, Corrine Hendrickson with a group called We Can. She's also the owner and operator of a child care facility in New Glarus. She's been kind of the point person on a lot of this. She's been reaching out, encouraging people to call their legislators to vote yes on this amendment, or even vote yes on having a vote for this amendment. Yeah. Because my understanding is the way the process would work here is that, you know, Democrats can introduce an amendment, but Republicans can block that amendment. And they have signaled all along that they have really no interest in taking up this funding for childcare and extending this program. And, you know, there are reports out of the AP this morning that said Senate leadership, which I believe is planning to take up the budget vote tomorrow, is not projecting any major changes to what was passed out of the Joint Finance Committee. So, and nevertheless, there can be a vote on this amendment, and people are being encouraged to call their representatives, contact them, and ask them to vote yes on this amendment to extend childcare.
And you made this point, and I would be interested to hear if anyone had a good answer to it. But you pointed out, I think on Twitter, what is the business community's response to this? Because everything I know about this crisis is it is a three-pegged stool, right? There is the family's responsibility, but there's also a government's responsibility, and there's also a business responsibility, because this affects businesses directly. Have you heard anything from some of the biggest employers? Like, I've seen some op-eds prior to this written by business leaders who are acknowledging that we need to be innovative in how we fix this. I've read some one-off cases where a community came together and was able to solve this. But have you heard anything since the Thursday this all went down from kind of the private sector as far as their reaction to this at all?
Yeah, not really.
Okay.
Not really.
Cool.
Which I think is so disappointing, because I think there were a few op-eds in the Journal Sentinel from people in the private sector, people in the nonprofit world who were speaking out and saying, you know, alerting people to the reality that could come without this funding and without an investment in childcare. And I think this is going to cause people to leave the workforce if they're not able to find quality childcare for their children. This is going to fall particularly on women, as it always does in these types of situations. And there has really been no significant response from the business community. They're allied with the Republican Party in this state, and they don't seem interested in crossing Robin Voss and company in the state legislature, which is so disappointing. And I think, you know, the workforce shortage that we always hear about from, you know, the top business groups in the state, well, they're creating a much worse one now, because you're not going to be able to have people in the workforce because they'll be home with their kids or working part-time jobs or doing various different things and not being full-time participants in the economy. And I think the one study that came out last week estimated that this would amount to, I think, $232 million in lost economic impact or lost wages for parents across Wisconsin. Again, like you said, not really any response from the business community on this issue.
Great.
We are just going backwards. I mean, what we were talking about last week is like sending women back to the kitchen barefoot and pregnant. It's like, it's all they want. It's all they want.
But it's very short-sighted. And yeah. I think that's the thing. It's like ideologically, if that is how you think the order of the world should work, it's one thing, but it's also not the world we live in. And it's also, I contend that for a lot of families, and we talked about this, I think last week or even 2 weeks ago when this first came down, it's also not the reality for even decades ago. My mom worked, my grandmothers worked, like women have always worked and figured this out, but it's also just the combination and the fact that wages have not kept up with living costs. And so people aren't making enough to be able to afford the price hikes of what it takes to run these centers. And like, things are just broken right now. And there's actual solutions being put forward of how we can try to fix it. And yet we don't want to.
Well, and this program did work too. And I think so much of the challenge for a lot of these childcare providers is wages. Yes. And I think, you know, as wages have gone up for a lot of other jobs in that kind of pay range, it's made it more difficult for childcare providers to retain people in the industry. You know, the childcare counts funding raised average wages for childcare for early educators in Wisconsin from $10.66 an hour to $12.66 an hour. That was the big increase, the $2 per hour. That's still terrible.
Terrible.
You know, that's still really, really bad. You know, you talk to and meet anybody who works with kids and they're underpaid. And, you know, particularly, you know, these are people working with infants.
Yeah.
I mean, it's such a crucial age for child development for so many reasons, and having some stability in the childcare system would just go such a long way to making a difference for families across the state. And for really no reason at all, I have not heard a good reason articulated as to why this funding should disappear at this particular moment, other than the fact that, well, it was pandemic era funding. Mm-hmm. So like other pandemic era programs, it should wind down. We'll talk to any provider or somebody who's been in the mix on trying to get legislation passed on this, and they will tell you that that is not the case. And they're adamant and passionate about that and saying that is not the case. So this is just a long running problem that we are, again, choosing to ignore and do nothing, even as we have this $7 billion surplus, this generational opportunity to make investments in Wisconsin. And look across the border to the west, Minnesota is putting more than $750 million towards childcare. If you're starting a young family and you have the option of living in Wisconsin or Minnesota, why would any of them choose Wisconsin right now?
Well, some of us have to because we started an entire brand called As Goes Wisconsin, and I don't really want to start something new called As Goes Minnesota.
I feel like it's fertile ground. You could just
There's no recombobulation area in Minnesota.
Yeah, exactly. All right. Well, we only have 2 minutes before we have to go to our first break. And so I want to at least set up. We're talking to Dan Schaefer. This is our new weekly segment where we're going to recombobulate with Dan Schaefer at 10:30 on Tuesdays. I guess I started the show yesterday with this question, and I will ask you, Dan Schaefer, and then we'll talk more about it after the break. Do you think, should Tony Evers sign this budget?
I think he really has to consider vetoing the whole thing.
Really?
I think he really has to consider it. I know the governor's office has powerful line item powers and partial vetoes and all that, as he's used in the first two budgets that have passed. But this budget is really bad. It misses the mark on so many cases. It makes cuts when we should be making investments. I think he really has to think about vetoing it. Yeah.
So we'll talk after the break about what that would actually mean politically, logistically, because I think this is kind of the do or die week of we'll see. I think everything I've heard so far is as of yesterday, he was saying, I need to see the final budget before I would commit to anything, but it's not off the table, but also it could screw with the shared revenue deal, supposedly. And also when we come back, I want to at least touch on where Milwaukee is between the county board and the common council with approving the sales tax, because that is looming. So we are talking to Dan Schaefer. Stick around. We're recombobulating on As Goes Wisconsin.
From Alexander Field to the Central Business District, locally grown radio, 97.5 FM and WFHR 1320 AM.
Starting at 6 a.m., Up North News, 8 to 10, The Earl Ingram Show. Mondays, 8 to 9, Under the Helmet with the Gravedigger, Gilbert Brown and Earl Ingram. 10 to 12, As Goes Wisconsin. At noon, Civic Media Network News. At 12:15, Town Call. 1 to 3, The Todd Alba Show. 3 to 4, Matt Flynn Direct. 4 to 6, The Devil's Advocates with Dom and Crute. And 6 to 7, The Maggie Dawn Show. On 5:40 a.m., WAUK.
The Todd Alba Show.
That's been pretty rough on the Joint Finance Committee. I know what you're going to
give bipartisan praise that they're going to raise the pay for district attorneys and public defenders. You don't get an attaboy for finally saying, we finally heard people cry uncle enough times. You either govern all the time or not once a decade when it's suddenly convenient. So,
but I think we have to at least give people hope once in a while that there is something happening to Madison that is a little bit on the good side.
The Todd Alba Show, weekday afternoons 1 till 3 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the Civic Media app. Up North News Radio with Pat Kreitlow.
I have Corrine Hendrickson, part of the Wisconsin Early Childhood Action Needed group.
The Joint Finance Committee, again in the middle of the night, took that out and said, well, hey, you have all this money coming from the federal government. Why don't you use that to create this program? Well, guess what? We proved it worked. Wages went up $2 an hour. There actually are a couple extra childcare businesses open now than there were about a year ago. And that's going to stop. Just Monday, we lost two.
Weekday morning, 6 till 8 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the app.
Here's your updated forecast on the Shaw.
Chance for scattered thunderstorms overnight. Otherwise, cloudy skies expected. Lows level off around 65. Southwest winds 8 to 15 miles an hour. A mix of clouds and sun tomorrow. Chance for scattered storms. Daytime highs approaching 80. Chance for scattered thunderstorms again tomorrow night. Lows dip down to about 60. Overcast. For Civic Media, I'm meteorologist Derek Height. Currently, it's 70 degrees.
This summer, 540 AM WAUK has a new lineup. 3 to 4, Matt Flynn Direct. 4 to 6, The Devil's Advocates with Dom and Crute on 540 AM WAUK.
As goes Wisconsin, I am Kristen Bry. We got Greg Buck on the board today, and we are recombobulating with Mr. Dan Schaefer of the Recombobulation Area. We're going to be doing this every Tuesday at 10:30 as of today. And so with the 8 minutes that we have left, I want to touch on both where we are with the budget. So you said in the last segment that you think Governor Evers has to seriously think about vetoing what likely will be the Republicans' past budget. What does it look like if that happens? Do you think there's political ramifications for him or the Democrats if he vetoes this and we have to do this all again in October?
I think there would be. And I think, you know, there were some details that are a little bit beyond my understanding about like administering things in the shared revenue bill or the education agreement and how exactly that would work out if Evers did go ahead and veto this budget. But I think with the line item powers that he has, he could do things like remove the tax break for the top earners, for the wealthiest Wisconsinites that Republicans want to be giving away the surplus to more or less.
Which is a
but they can't add anything quickly back into it.
Even if they cut that top bracket, the 7.6 to 6.5, the top earners still get a tax break based on because they are taxed incrementally at each level. So when you cut the lower tax brackets, everyone above them is also getting that same cut, just as a reminder. Sorry to cut you off.
Right. So, but he can veto these things out of the budget, but he can't put anything back into the budget.
Yeah.
Right. So it's like this cut to UW that Evers has said he is not comfortable with. Obviously, he's talked about a veto with that, but he can't put funding back into the budget with this. So if he were to, you know, veto the whole budget, the legislature would have to come back, I believe, this fall to present something again. But I think considering how far Republicans have gone with this budget, he has to consider it, because I think if it was just, okay, let's meet in the middle on PFAS and childcare and the UW budget and all these different things. And you know, okay, let's target the tax cut toward the lower brackets and whatever else. I think he'd be comfortable signing it just as he did for the last couple budget cycles. But I think just considering how far Republicans have gone with how far they've pushed this budget to the right is one reason. But also, I think this is kind of the one opportunity that Evers would have to make this kind of move. He was just reelected, you know, by a larger margin than what he was initially elected by in 2018. You know, he's not going to feel the political ramifications the way that somebody who might be in their first term heading into some sort of reelection battle down the road might be. So is this his one opportunity to do that? To really stand firm on the budget, stand firm on the priorities that he ran on and won on? You know, I think that has to be part of the calculation here, too.
Well, and that's what I said, you know, in even for higher income Democrats or higher income independents who voted for Tony Evers, is this and is there as much enough of a draw from the tax cuts that they would get in this budget to override why they voted for him in the first place and the different priorities they value? And I don't know if that's the calculation that some of the Republicans are thinking, that he's going to get pressure from his higher income voters, but I don't know how their brains work.
I don't think that's the reason at all. I think it would be more about like how to implement the parts of the shared revenue and education bills that would go forward. Also things like upping pay for public defenders and you know, people in the court system. That was, you know, I know you've talked about that on your show too. That's a really big issue. Other pay raises for state employees and things like that would have to go back to the drawing board. So I think that is probably more of the constituency that he would, you know, be contending with, and not just the self-interested high earners that have, I guess, gravitated a little bit more towards Democrats in recent years.
Yeah.
But I think people want to expand Medicaid. People want to fund childcare. People want to have paid family leave. People want to have all of these, you know, all of the 500 plus priorities that Republicans ripped out of this budget to get it started. Like, I think that's why people wanted to reelect the governor, because he was running on these things. And I think, you know, the top earners who might support Democrats are not supporting him because of their own personal pocketbooks.
The $1,200 or $2,000 tax cut they might get. All right. Well, we only have a couple minutes, so we'll have to save a lot of this for next week. But I guess just initial thoughts on where we are with, so far, the shared revenue bill has been signed. It is now in the hands of Milwaukee's Common Council, Milwaukee's County Board, of whether or not we're going to get a sales tax. You wrote a really great article talking about how this is not a great deal, but we have to sign it. So what have you been hearing as far as what we can expect or kind of where it goes, at least in the next week, when you'll come back and we'll talk about this again?
Yeah, I think, you know, there was a key committee vote that happened yesterday in the Milwaukee Common Council to kind of advance the sales tax. And it was, there was 6 in favor, 2 abstained, but nobody voted no. So I think even, you know, even the pessimistic council members like downtown Alderman Bob Bauman, who said this is never going to happen and the sky is falling, he even voted for it.
Yeah.
So I think, you know, I think the, and I think there were some key testimony from people, you know, from the legislature. Somebody like Representative Evan Goyke, who voted against the proposal in the legislature, came to the Common Council and said, you should vote for this because we can't get rid of the policy now that already passed and was signed into law. The dumb policy stuff is going to be there regardless of whether they fund the sales tax or not. So I do think, you know, and I think there was a reason that negotiators from the city and county level made it so this would be a 2/3 vote, because I think they understood that that's a threshold that they were going to be able to get to.
Yeah.
And so I do think this sales tax will likely pass. You know, the language that I used in my column that you referenced was live to fight another day. And I've heard that phrase come up from Alderwoman Dmitrievich and Fire Chief Lipsky. I think that's kind of where the city's at. You have to pass this and fight another day.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, well, we'll get into that more next week unless something else more pressing pops up between now and then, which is always a possibility in this state. But definitely, if you are not subscribed to the Recombobulation Area, what are you waiting for? It's the best $5 you can spend. It's a coffee. It's a Frappuccino. That's it. Dan Schaefer, so happy that we're doing this and that we'll get to talk every week starting today. So we'll see you next week at 10:30 on Tuesday.
Absolutely. Thanks so much for having me, Kristen.
All right. Well, we're going to take a break.
And Greg.
We're taking a break for the top of the hour news. And when we come back, we're going to be talking to investigative reporter from Wisconsin Watch, Phoebe Petrovic, about her series on voucher schools. Stay with us. This is As Goes Wisconsin.
Childhood should be the happiest time of life. But for many children living in poverty with blindness, facial deformities, and other crippling conditions, it's riddled with pain, rejection, shame, and isolation. At Mercy Ships, we're answering the cries of some of the world's most forgotten children and adults through free, life-changing surgeries, surgeries that turn despair into hope. These once heartbroken boys and girls, and many men and women too, are now restored, accepted, and on their way to a life of opportunity and joy. No one can change the world on their own, but together we can transform it by restoring hope to one person, one child at a time. Volunteers from your community and around the globe are bringing life-changing healing and hope to the forgotten poor. To learn how you too can help change the world, one child at a time, go to mercyships.org today.
WFHR, Wisconsin Rapids, 1320 AM and W248DE, broadcasting at 97.5 FM.